Welcome to this SKU audio podcast, titled The Spirit of the Karate Journey. First published November 2020 for the SKU Quarterly Magazine. Ray Mason of the SKU asks Derek Kirkham-sensei, the director of coaching to the Shotokan Karate Union, what could be an existential question for karate in general.
Hello, Sensei. Tell us about a topic close to your heart. Hi, about what you call the spirit of the karate journey and what is going to happen with karate after COVID has been beaten.
Whoa, jump right in there and ask the difficult ones first. Oh, dear. The world has changed, and obviously karate with it. Society has become a place where the wokers have inherited the earth. Karate, more than other martial arts, has for a long time been treated by its participants with great reverence. It's treated as if it were a religion, and the chief instructors of some associations are treated as if they're infallible high priests who are speaking the handed down word of God. And that word is also treated as if it was etched in tablets of stone. Personal opinions and individual thoughts seem to be discouraged unless they're uttered downwards to the devotees by the hierarchy. Anything else would be deemed as an act of sacrilege against the holy scriptures of the Do. I've been training and involved in karate and the martial arts since 1965, which was before the first UK Shotokan group had been formed. And that was formed after splitting away from the British Karate Federation. I've seen many governing bodies come and go, and numerous regime changes within them. But there is one group that has endured, and they are the petty politicians who have grown in stature with their self-interest at heart. They've been tightening their stranglehold over the unwitting public who have the simplest of desires. That's the desire merely to learn karate, whatever that might be. I've seen associations and their breakaway subgroups and their key guru people also come and go. And associations shift their priorities with what seems to have been, over that period, an ever-changing marketplace. I've seen various organisation models employed, from the absolute autocratic to the bold claim of being a truly diplomatic and democratic group, and even the laissez-faire approach. I've seen every decade or so the emergence of new subgroups that are led by various ambitious newly graded third dans who were so obviously thinking that it's time that they get their cut of the financial cake. These groups started up by claiming that the reason for their existence was because they and their students were being held back by their old association, or that the aims of their old association no longer matched their particular goals. However, within a short while, they themselves were faced with all of the same organisational problems as the previous association had done, and any impartial onlooker could easily see that that model wise they themselves had morphed into a smaller clone of exactly what they've moved away from. I've seen numerous student intake surges take place over the years as a result of different media inspired events, just like the current Cobra Kai trend. I've seen far too many organisational splits take place, only for them to fall by the wayside in a short time. Or even worse, they fragment even further a year or so down the line, creating a situation of an almost viral exponential growth in the number of organisations that are available for new karateka to join. And sadly, in some cases, the splits didn't really add to the greater good of the situation, but all they seemed to do was create a discernible decline in the lowering in the way that standards are measured. I've seen the original tier of evangelical JKA Shotokan karate pioneers pass away, making a gap to what was a link to the past, a link to the traditional ways of the style, but not before they themselves split away from the JKA. Of course, there are now more than enough fragmented groups around today that love to argue amongst each other as to who is the real heir to the throne. These Western groups that are full of Eastern promise and are run by self-anointed leaders who themselves as being who sort of present themselves as the soul spirit incarnate of all things Japanese. After all, they are entitled to say that because they have been photographed touching the hem of their individual Japanese master's robe. I've seen politically motivated entrepreneurs chip away at traditional karate to create a sporting style from the Budo art form that has taken prominence in today's marketplace, only for the navigators of the new sporting pathway to push for Olympic recognition, which would be the ideal home and refuge for the scoundrel politicians, as they would be able to hide their shenanigans embedded in the arms of the world's greatest administrators, politicians and troublemakers on the planet. And by that, I mean the Olympic movement. I've seen a whole host of really good and dedicated Western instructors carry on regardless, in despite of all the aforementioned diversions. And they've had decades quietly offering an authentic traditional Japanese karate learning experience for the students. They won't be left alone. Only for their non-conformist, peaceful success at gaining students to the traditional ways, they were deemed as a threat. As a result, they attracted resentment from the politicians who jealously marginalized many of them. That marginalization seemed to be executed just in case these traditionalists dared to pull back the curtain and expose to the general population that the great Wizard of Oz behind the curtain is not all it's cracked up to be. After observing all of that firsthand, I thought the sector would have imploded years ago. I definitely never imagined for a moment that it would be a worldwide health epidemic that would pose such a threat to karate's existence and bring around such a massive sea change and seismic shift in the thinking and the rhetoric of the karate zealots. All over the years, the defining edges of many facets and characteristics of karate are today so blurred that at times it's difficult to say what aspect of karate or even what style of karate any particular group are advocating or following. And unfortunately, one cannot always be accurately guided by what the group's marketing rhetoric may say. In the early days, karate started here in the UK with a small band of enthusiastic Westerners, people like Vernon Bell, who had seen and heard of karate. And these people were so interested to find out more that they went in search to discover what it exactly was. These people went to Europe to consult with and learn from others, people who had gone before them, people who had seen more of karate than they had. Bell invited the Japanese Shotokan instructors to visit here, and then he asked them to stay and show us what they knew and what they had to offer us. Their arrival, however, ignited the political blue touch paper. And then the first British breakaway organisational split happened, forming a Shotokan-only group. Although something called karate is readily available everywhere, it seems, these days, however, not much of it resembles what I would refer to as being traditional Japanese Shotokan karate. Nothing seems to have changed, though, that, well, not that much today, in my opinion, because anyone who truly wants to understand and experience real traditional Japanese karate, then they will definitely need to go in search of it. And en route, they'll have to filter out the less than accurate marketing blurbs of some groups, because that would be misleading for them. Today, there are too many groups operating under the banner of traditional Japanese karate. However, not many of them are offering the true Budo Bujitsu karate experience. They're offering the promise of it, but in reality, what they are offering is an organisation or a dojo that's set up for them making a living first and foremost. A place where the needs of the members come a long way behind in last place. The Nakayama JKA World Domination Plan that sought to spread the Japanese karate style of Shotokan karate worldwide did, in the process of achieving that aim, uniformly adopt a way of teaching the subject matter in a strict military fashion through the structure of the three Ks. And great emphasis was placed on the structured hierarchy of the grading ranking system and strict control through the use of the chain of command. For many people, myself included, the JKA format had an ordered, structured appeal to it that made learning appear easier. as it did the associated historical and cultural Japanese references that were used using this methodology. I experienced karate before the Japanese came here, and would like to point out how at that time society's attitudes were vastly different to those of today, because then there were in some sectors of society a post-war anti-Japanese feeling towards karate. And unlike today, the average age of karate students was considerably higher than today. The students were also from a more disciplined age group, and they were readily willing to accept the sometimes austere teaching methods that were used. I'm not for a minute advocating that methodology was the only or even the gold star pathway to coaching. It was just how the JKA system was presented to us by the Japanese. I feel that the karateka who have unconditionally bought into the self-inflating hyperbole of some organisations have managed to squeeze themselves and karate into the ever-growing list of things such as politics and religion as a topic that everyone should avoid entering into conversation about, especially whilst in polite company.
So what aspect of karate has been your personal goal?
Oh dear, the questions are not getting any easier, eh? My answer to that question is going to sound ever so contradictory, because I'll have to answer it from two different standpoints. Firstly, I'll answer your question, but I'll answer your question from my personal point of view, and that is exactly what I recommend to students. For me, a free thinking adult individual, all of my studies are conducted with me being the main beneficiary. The same goes no matter what the topic is that I'm studying. I take this approach simply because of the time, the work, and the effort that I put into any study. That isn't saying that I refuse to share my experiences and the learning outcomes of my studies with others, because I have dedicated myself to that for 5 decades of my life. I've passed on to others what I deemed important. What I'm saying is, if one wants to be a good coach, then one needs still to be a good student. And if one enjoys one's studies and you can see progressive improvement, then what you teach to others will come over with more genuine enthusiasm and will be more interesting to other people. You know, Ray, that I've studied different styles of karate and martial arts prior to the JKA start in teaching Shotokan in this country, and that I went in search of any opportunity to learn more about karate from many different sources for no other reason than I was too young to be accepted into a full-time dojo at the time. So I accepted my input from wherever it was available. That isn't to say that the input that I received at that time was second rate, because that wasn't the case at all, as I was being taught karate from enthusiastic people who were and went on to be authorities in their particular styles and disciplines. The teaching methodologies were varied, but all the sessions displayed discipline and the respect for the cultural and etiquettes of karate. Although the waza names might have been different, from one group to another, but the sessions weren't. They were held in a friendly atmosphere, as everyone voluntarily bought into those values and enjoyed training just for training's sake. Later on, as a dan grade, I started searching abroad, firstly within the Shotokan style of karate, and later on within other styles too. I was searching for people that had something new to offer me, anything that fitted in with my personal interests at that time. As a result, I made many good friends and contacts with organisations and individuals that totally disregarded their political dictates. I've interviewed for magazines and trained under and alongside many of the renowned experts in their particular fields. I've gathered a database of valuable input that I adapted and utilised in my holistic teachings of Shotokan karate. This isn't too dissimilar to what the high-profile JKA instructor, Mr. Naka, is currently doing, albeit I personally had trod that path 40 years earlier. I find these video logs quite interesting and refreshing, especially to see that the new era of the JKA is actually more open to such input. All aspects of karate and the martial arts are interesting to me, and I believe that all variations are valid. But it depends upon what question you seek the answer to, as to the level of validity it may hold in your search. I'm happy with my second opinion of your question. I'm happy with it being juxtaposed to my personal opinion, because I make it as the director of coaching to the Shotokan Karate Union, a position that requires compromise of one's personal preferences, as the SKU is a member conscious group, a Shinboku no Shakai, a friendship society that seeks to facilitate in the learning of and to afford its members the opportunity to share with like-minded people their experiences of and their understanding of the traditional Japanese Shotokan Karate Do system. The SKU model, it is geared to offer a style and pathway specific specialist service to its members, a specialist service that doesn't hold them back or restrict its members from searching for answers outside of their own organization, or to be allowed to experiment with other theories and methods. We recognize that there are many reasons why people choose to take the journey of study karate, and there are as many different personalities and life experiences of the people who start training. They have different expectations, requirements, and likewise their motivation for starting karate training are as varied as the number of people who start. They will therefore take different lengths of time to achieve the level of attainment that they require from their training journey. Some of the required levels of attainment, well, they range from superficial level through to expert knowledge level, which is a level that is enough for one to be able to teach others accurately and successfully. It's legitimate to say that some people learn karate so that they can sell on their knowledge by teaching others, earn an income from their karate. While the majority of people join the club to learn a little self-defense, others treat karate as a sporting pursuit or a means to keep fit. And then there are those who have the ambition of obtaining a black belt within itself. That is their only aim. But sadly, students rarely start karate with the desire to master the art and use karate as a vehicle, as a personal challenge to self-improvement. However, when long-term students identify these benefits, then often their motivation to participate in karate changes as they develop. My personal journey, however, unceremoniously started when I was a cocky youth, with my motivation being solely to learn the dirty tricks of this thing that they call karate, so I could use them and lay someone out with a flashy technique or two. Little did I know that the 3K's coaching methodology of teaching karate is thankfully geared to avoid arming crazy young men like I was with the weapons to do exactly what they wanted. That's why in traditionally taught Japanese Shotokan karate classes, the early drop-off rate of students is larger than within other styles. It's as if the system was purposely designed to sort the wheat from the chaff before you armed them up. Luckily, the other benefits of learning traditional Japanese Shotokan karate do became instantly apparent and more desirable to me. And since that time, I've had a different perspective of karate. My interest was also raised in the language, the history, the culture, the discipline, the etiquette, the techniques of karate. And oh yeah, I got the opportunity to roll my sleeves up and legitimately kick and punch somebody twice a week. I mean, what's not to like about that? And when I first saw the first wave of Japanese supermen demonstrate their art, well, I was hooked. Because they looked, moved, spoke so differently to the European karatekas who had influenced me up till that point. And it was then that all the input that I'd received from Western instructors made even more sense to me. The promise of what serious study of the Japanese Shotokan karate system could do for me was enough for me to fully commit to that system. The spiritual growth aspect of one's karate training was emphasized, and it was also pointed out how arguably the disciplined regime was character building and was something that one should strive for and learn to develop continuously through one's training life and beyond. The first wave of Japanese Shotokan instructors that we saw were Kanazawa Anoida, Shirai, Kasei. And later on, their assistants were Asano, Kato, Tamita, and Kawazoe. They all had a special presence about them. They were young, fit men in the primes. And one instantly knew when they performed their waza that what they were showing us, what we were watching, was exactly how it should be performed. And it was exactly what we were all trying to replicate with our technique. Nevertheless, even they had obvious variations in the delivery. Their preferences were different, and they emphasised different aspects of karate as being most important to them. Their teaching styles were similar, as all of them were following the JKA teaching formula. But it was accentuated by their different personalities. This led me personally to understand the meaning of the maxim that I still teach to my students today. And that was that no one man holds all the answers to another man's questions. I'd adopted a journeyman approach to my studies, and I was prepared to nomadically travel to other clubs and events. And because the Japanese were here in the UK promoting the JKA Shotokan style, them days it was easier and possible to see more of what they had to offer. I was never disappointed by them in the early days. Then came the splits. The first of the big Japanese organization splits happened prior to Nakayama's death. Kanazawa formed the SKIF in 1978, and it firmly split opinions and loyalties. Asano broke away 4 years earlier in 1974 here in the UK, and Kasei broke away to form his own group and initially took Shirai with him. Kato also left around the same time frame and formed the first of his to be various named groups. After Nakayama's death, a huge disagreement erupted as to whom, either through seniority or by selection, was to become the next JKA chief instructor. This caused there to be two separate JKA groups confusingly claiming to be and simultaneously using the JKA name at the same time. It was only after a court ruling that forced one of the groups, the Asai faction, to change their name from the JKA to the IJKA, later to be the JKS. The IJKA also had its troubles with splits, as there were too many top Japanese JKA instructors who wanted to be the head of their own groups. There were two other IJKA groups and other subgroups with similar acronyms who were all claiming that Asai was exclusively the chief instructor of their group. Now there are a further five organisations been formed across the globe after further splits away that followed Asai's death. When I first started visiting Japan in the 80s, it was as a firm believer in the Japanese ways, and I was in search of authentic Japanese Shotokan karate in the home of the source. That was before the majority of the organizational splits had taken place. And I went to Japan initially for a month on the first occasion to make contacts, to train, and to interview for a magazine at a couple of famous Japanese karateka. The second time I stayed longer, and I was there as a direct invitation from Mr. Kanazawa. I stayed at Mr. Kanazawa's home in Chiba on a couple of times. I trained with both Mr. Kanazawa and with other famous SKIF and JKA instructors of the day at both their Tokyo HQs. I met and interviewed Mr. Nakayama on one occasion and was invited by him downstairs in Ebisu to his Hutsugan, and was privileged to witness him in the course of conversation give spontaneous demonstrations of the technicalities of his waza. I was accepted into an influential Japanese family in Osaka, and I was treated as one of the family. I absorbed the Japanese culture enough to confirm to myself that it would feature greatly in my further teachings of the style. With their help, they eased my way forward in Japan by supplying me with very good introductions and contacts. I've returned many times to Japan since over the decades, and experienced various other styles of karate and made many good friends there. To go and learn your karate in Japan is not essential by any means for a student to enjoy and become proficient at their particular art. But for me, this was the ideal arrangement, and it further formed my opinion of what it was I wanted to learn from practicing karate, and what I would be passing on to others through my teachings afterwards. It adequately equipped me to give my students the whole Japanese Shotokan experience in their training. Despite there being many knowledgeable and highly proficient Western karate instructors around who are still teaching what I consider to be a genuine form of traditional Japanese Shotokan karate today in the world, there are, however, many more people who are offering something that trades under the name of traditional karate, but the product that they offer is not recognizable as traditional karate. That isn't to say what they're offering is of no value, but I'm definitely saying that it's of no value whatsoever if your motivation for studying karate and your core values are the same as the Shotokan Karate Union's. When given the choice between two instructors, the general public will always gravitate towards the instructors with the oriental features over the occidental instructors, who these days may well have much more experience than their oriental counterparts. And it's that factor alone that'll ensure that the Japanese-led organizations after Corona will continue to be a force in the marketplace. Okay, maybe not as big as they were at their peak, but their organisations will remain. Sadly, prejudice, snobbery and elitism are rife in karate, much of which I believe is because people are trying to exploit karate solely to make a living from teaching karate. That aim is okay in itself, because teaching is like any other service and it's reasonable to expect to get paid if you're supplying a professional service. But it's when the prejudice, snobbery and elitism turns into the berating of other organisations and of particular individuals' practices in an effort to enhance their own sense of self-importance. I want people to be aware of people who insist on measuring whether their karate is better than another form of karate, as it's nothing short of ludicrous and is impossible to objectively measure, because the permutations of the number of motivational factors of why people practice karate are as varied as the number of people who practice it. Before lockdown, the use of online video technology to teach and to assess students was only used by a few people, and they were deemed to be the stuff of what Mac dojos are made of. Online coaching and gradings were frowned upon and instantly dismissed by many, myself included, as they were a step too far of a deviation from what was considered to be the norm. But through desperation, even the Japanese organisations, who were the biggest detractors of using new technology in karate, have been forced to succumb to the pragmatic approach of utilising the same technology that they once slagged off others for using. As karate professionals, it was a measure that was taken reluctantly, simply so that they could continue to earn enough money to put bowls of soba on the table for their families to eat. COVID has killed off numerous clubs from around the world, clubs that will never start up again, mainly due to the break in the continuity of the available services being offered to its core members. Members are not being offered any services by some closed-minded and demotivated club instructors. The reluctance to change their thinking is what allowed the dinosaurs to become extinct. And they're not embracing the thoughts of Gichin Funakoshi when he said, "To search for the old is to understand the new. The old, the new, it's a matter of time. In all things, man must have a clear mind." They will have to change their ways, even if it's as a temporary measure under these extreme circumstances. They'll have to change how they offer the services to their members, or they may well lose their clubs forever. It's too late to go backwards now. It's too late because the genie has been well and truly let out of the bottle. Lockdown has highlighted which groups are run on outdated models and which groups are run to fulfil the financial needs of the organisers. And they are definitely not run to meet the training needs of its members. Lockdown's also shown that some people were trading on achievements of past glories. They can no longer hide behind that approach if they want to continue to function in the post-COVID marketplace. It has also brought to the fore new names, new faces of people from the next generation who genuinely do have something to offer. It has also shown how fossilized with complacency some established instructors have got, and how they have been highly conspicuous by their public absence in 2020. In 2021, they've been forced to offer something, but they're still hiding their outdated ways behind closed doors, online courses. Lockdown has also highlighted that in a real emergency, such as COVID to the karate world, that karate governing bodies have no real power or influence outside of those people who they're already pushing around. By that I mean the sports organisations that recognise the governing bodies in the hopes that they can deliver the golden fleece of Olympic recognition. The whole structure of karate will have to change and be rethought after all things COVID get back to safe levels, a level that's safe enough that we can return to the dojo and train together. There'll always be scaremongers and a parasitic race to run various governing bodies. Although they may be run under different acronyms, they'll be run by the old guard of politicians. But now the false prophets have had their Olympic El Dorado incentive taken away from their arsenal, and breakdancing, it is taking karate's Olympic status. Then the governing bodies will soon have to invent yet another essential need for everyone in karate, so that they can be compliant and dependent on them for its delivery. Unsurprisingly, it'll be a need that they say that they will be able to deliver. But at an organisation level, I also believe that things will change. I believe to some degree that groups will move closer to emulating the Shotokan Karate Union model. Much to my frustration, I also believe that there'll be a percentage of the marketplace taken up by the generalists. These are people who are offering a generic form of self-defence, but with the barefaced cheek, they will pass it off at what they are calling a form of traditional karate. And sadly, they'll get away with it too, because the uneducated general public read the club's marketing blurbs and can only believe what they're told initially. After COVID, the existing clubs that have survived the pandemic will, as a result of the online open video karate training coaching forums, be looking further afield outside of their own organisations for input. And they look towards specialist groups such as the Shotokan Karate Union and others to develop their support network. Someone to help them with their specific study requirements. We have, in the SKU since 1985, had a strong set of core values and training aims that have not needed to change with the moving trends. We may, as a result of the pandemic, introduce a permanent service using the new technology as an alternative, just as we have done during the lockdown, as a means of getting our message out there for our remote members. But as for changing our pathway, I really don't think so, Ray. I mean, all in all, Granville, it's been a funny old journey. And in summing up, I believe that there is a change ahead for karate, with new organisations taking the opportunity of the new beginnings to launch themselves into the marketplace. But on a word of caution, caveat emptor, buyer beware, as many new groups will not be exactly what you're looking for, as their claims and marketing could be misleading to the novice. I also feel that after being locked down, that many karateka who have had the chance to see what is different out there, by that I mean what's being showcased online during lockdown by other groups, then they will be enticed to seek advice from out of organisation instructors. So then, if the dinosaur organisations want to carry on trading after the new dawn, then they'll be forced to let go of their restricting strangleholds that they've maintained for decades over their membership. I feel that the open door policy model of the SKU will be emulated by others, so that their members will be encouraged to and can without reproach freely train with other people from outside of their own organisation. Yet at the same time, the membership will have to have supply of access to in-house technical input from experts from other styles and arts. Access all of the usual services that one would expect from a traditional karate group, no matter where in the world the members are based. So, if you imagine your journey in the martial arts as if you were going from where you are today to a specific point somewhere that you want to be tomorrow, then firstly, you must find out what aspect of karate you are interested in. Then, search for a specialist group and a specialist coach of that specific aspect. Once you've found it, enter into your training with an open but inquisitive mind. Commit to your training and don't deviate from the path. But don't be afraid to admit that you might have taken a wrong turn. And if you do take the wrong path, then make corrective measures to get back onto the right path and achieve what was your initial goal. Also, don't be afraid to admit that your choice of original destination is no longer important to you, because now you have a better insight that's gained through education and experience, and as such, you've found a much more interesting aspect of karate that you wish to pursue long term. But most importantly, for everyone, please ensure that you enjoy your studies by finding an instructor with a like-minded bunch of karateka, because often is the case that the journey is of greater importance than reaching the destination itself.
Thanks for giving us your honest assessment and opinions on a problem that could see the end of karate as we know it today.
No, you're welcome, Ray. Good luck and good practice.
Thank you for listening to this SKU audio podcast.